I'm Tom Shalhoub, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Thursday, April 5th, 2018. I'm Lisa Brady. With his border wall still a long way off, President Trump calls for troops on the Mexican border.
We know how to defend something and seal something. We can do it.
I'm Chris Foster. President Trump gets what may be good news about the special counsel Russia investigation.
Robert Mueller has been very good about keeping whatever he has close to the vest.
And I'm Harry Kasianis. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
Barely 24 hours after President Trump talked about sending troops to the Mexican border.
Until we can have a wall and proper security, we're going to be guarding our border with the military.
Plans were set in motion.
The president has directed the National Guard personnel be deployed to the southern border.
Homeland Security Chief Kirstjen Nielsen vowing not to allow the current level of illegal immigration, more than 1,000 people a day, to become the norm.
The president is frustrated. He has been very clear that he wants to secure our border. He's been very clear that he wants to do that in a bipartisan way with Congress.
But in the meantime, she says he's doing what he can without Congress.
We have done this before with the United States military in 2006 to 2008, and also in 2012 on two different presidents, Bush and Obama.
Fox military analyst and retired general Jack Keane.
What happens with the military is we will not intercept illegals coming across the border because we don't have the authority to detain like law enforcement has. We cannot, the United States military cannot detain Americans inside the United States border.
And that's because of a more than century-old law, correct?
That's right, posse comitatus. But what we will do is reinforce the border control, and we'll, as opposed to conducting interception operations, we'll conduct surveillance. So we'll be able to put our very advanced technology sensors in places where they're not now, see people coming across, give early warning to the border patrol so they can respond to it and they can do the interception. And we've done this before, so it's a good complement to what the border patrol is doing. And as you know, they've always been fundamentally understaffed and under-resourced given the scale and magnitude of the problem.
Behind the scenes, there was some reporting that the Pentagon may have been taken a little bit off guard by the president's public comments about this.
Not the first time. That happened twice in 2 days, once over troops on the border and also pulling out of Syria. And so I think the Pentagon was taken off guard in both of those. But that's just the president's operating style. I mean, he says what he's on his mind in a public event, speaks his mind frankly, and then his staff, moves very quickly to coordinate with the Pentagon and try to understand what the next options are going to be.
As a retired general, do you think that type of operating style by the president is detrimental in any way to Pentagon operations?
No, I think it just, for them, it takes a little while to get used to that. Here's what they really appreciate, because the president has given them the full authority to execute operations, conflict operations. So we're in Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan, Northern Africa, conducting conflict operations, as opposed to always going back to the administration and asking permission to do various things, even types of airstrikes. Is what we had to do with the Obama administration. They kind of micromanage tactical operations. This president has given them the full authority to make all those decisions. They're military leaders. He has trust and confidence in them. The president's concerned about the results, not the how of it. The how of it's up to the military leaders to execute. And they really appreciate that. And for our audience to understand, that actually makes our operations more effective because we can be so much more responsive to what's happening with the enemy. And we don't have to pause and skip permission. We just do what we need to do to defeat that enemy based on what they're doing. And that has given all of our military commanders out there a greater sense of confidence working for this commander-in-chief. I mean, they respected the previous commander-in-chief. Believe me, the military is always very loyal to whoever the commander-in-chief is. They try to stay out of the politics of it. But this one's given them full authorities, and they appreciate it.
So do you support sending troops to the southern border?
Well, I do. I mean, I don't see the security reports, that the president's seeing every single day that come from Central Intelligence Agency, that come from Homeland Security, et cetera. the Defense Intelligence Agency. And if I'll trust them, if they believe that this trafficking across the border is increasing and they want to get control of it, yeah, absolutely, let's do it. I mean, this is about protecting the American people fundamentally. And, you know, this MS-13 bunch has been marauding around this country and conducting some of the most horrific assassinations and murders in this country. It's just absolutely reprehensible behavior, and we finally are getting after this sort of thing. And all of them are illegals to a person. You know.
Do you think it would work, sending troops? You think that would be effective?
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, no doubt about it. I mean, we know how to defend something and seal something. We can do it.
The initial announcement didn't say how many troops or how much it would cost. Jennifer Griffin covers the Pentagon for Fox News.
There are many on Capitol Hill, including Republican congressmen who had fought very hard on the Armed Services Committee to get a $700 billion defense budget, which had tens of millions of dollars to fix the readiness problems in the Air Force and in the Marine aviation. You know, we've reported for the last 2 years about all of the planes that have been falling out of the sky that have where pilots aren't getting enough training hours. The planes are having maintenance problems because for years the military had been putting off a lot of this maintenance because of budget cuts. They finally have the budget to fix those problems, and now they're being told to reappropriate some of that money, and they're really concerned that that money for the National Guard going to the border is going to come out of those readiness funds.
What's the distinction here? How does this help ramp up security? Is it just a case of having more eyes, more intelligence at the border?
I think that at this point, again, this is a bit of a work in progress, but yes, it is mostly for surveillance, but it also perhaps is to send a message to those who might be thinking of making the trek through Mexico from Central America up to the border. What we heard from Homeland Security Secretary Nielsen is that after the inauguration last year, the illegal border crossings were down 44%. That was a 40-year low last April. And what's happened in the last year, because the laws here have not changed, the migrants and the smugglers who were bringing people across the border were waiting to see, after President Trump's tough talk on the border, on the wall, on the immigration enforcement, they were waiting to see what was going to change. And what they saw was that not much changed. The wall has not been built. There hasn't been a lot of change to the law in terms of there's still catch and release in place. And so Congress has not closed loopholes on that front. They've not passed legislation to change the immigration laws. And so now, a year later, we heard from the Homeland Security Secretary that the numbers of illegal immigrants have risen again and are back up to where they were a year ago or over a year ago when President Trump took over. So that has raised some concerns at the White House, and that is the reason that they're giving for why he wants to mobilize the National Guard right now. But again, it does come down to money. It does come down to what are those guardsmen supposed to do. They can't. There's only a small portion of, you know, several dozen miles where they could actually build part of the wall, and that would be about 35 miles at the Barry Goldwater Air Force Base in Arizona on the border with Mexico. That's a live fire range where the Air Force already is based.
Jennifer, you're at the Pentagon virtually every day. Are you hearing any concern at the Pentagon that this is all part of the president perhaps trying to pressure Congress to get something done on immigration reform?
The people at the Pentagon who I speak to are very careful about weighing in on politics. But it's just somewhat, I would describe it as dizzying for the planners and the procurers and the appropriators here at the Pentagon, who are trying to figure out how to spend the budget, where to position troops. And it's just every day it seems like there's a surprise and they're being asked to shift gears and do something differently.
Jennifer Griffin, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
This is Harry Kasianis with your Fox News commentary coming up.
I would do it under oath.
You would, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, I would.
President Trump in January saying he would testify under oath for Robert Mueller, the special counsel investigating Russia election meddling. He said it again since. Now, he hasn't testified yet, but he may have some sense of relief now about the investigation. Fox confirms the president's been told through his lawyers that he is not the target of a criminal investigation.
You generally don't tell people that you're not under investigation because you don't know what the next witness is going to say.
South Carolina Republican Congressman Trey Gowdy is also a lawyer. He tells Fox and Friends what he thinks Mueller's doing here.
I think he felt a special obligation to say, look, you're not the target of the investigation. But if the next witness says something different, all that can change.
So if you were his attorney, you would not have a sigh of relief.
Heavens no.
And we don't know what happens next.
Could someone who's a subject of this particular probe become a target of the probe? Absolutely.
John Decker covers the White House for Fox News Radio. He's also a lawyer.
I wouldn't be, you know, cheering and spiking the football just yet because this investigation is not yet over.
Is this sort of when we talk about this person's a person of interest in this case, but not necessarily being called a subject in this case? Is that analogous?
It is analogous. Absolutely. A person, if you think of a criminal case being initially considered a person of interest, could develop into a suspect in the same vein that a target could develop into a criminal target in Mr. Mueller's investigation.
It seems to me there are a few possibilities here for this being told to the president. If you take it at face value, the president's not under criminal investigation, he's not a subject of it, and he won't be. Another is that he wasn't at the time, but that he could be. Another that I'm sure the president's being warned about is that he could just be baiting President Trump to talk. Like, oh, you're off the hook. You may as well come and spill your guts to me. Or it could be that Mueller thinks that he simply literally can't prosecute a sitting president of the United States, and that'll have to be left up to Congress for impeachment or whatever else.
So all of those are possibilities. And all of those possibilities that you just mentioned are possibilities that President Trump's attorneys, Jay Sekulow, and also Ty Cobb have to consider when they consider whether or not to submit their client, President Donald J. Trump, to an interview with Robert Mueller and his investigative team in the special counsel's office. They have to consider all of that. That's what this kind of is. It's sort of a chess match to figure out what it is that the special counsel has, what it is that the special counsel does not have, and whether their particular client, President Trump, poses a risk to himself by submitting himself to any type of interview.
I guess it's the same with anybody who's called in for questioning in that sort of situation. You don't know what they know. And right there, if you lie, you're trapped in that.
Well, that's right. And as we've seen so far in Mr. Mueller's investigation, some of the focus of his indictments are on individuals who have not been truthful with his investigators. That is obviously a concern. President Trump has indicated that he'd like to talk to Mr. Mueller. He'd like to see this investigation over quickly. One way to do that, if you haven't done anything wrong, is to submit yourself to an interview. But then again, as you mentioned, Chris, there is that concern of saying something which you think is correct and it turns out not to be correct, and it exposes you yourself to the possibility of being charged with lying to investigators.
John, you're a lawyer. President's your client. What do you tell him to do here?
I would say to hold off as long as possible. Why? Because this investigation continues. We know that so far, two members of the president's inner circle at one time have been the focus of the president's investigation, Rick Gates and Paul Manafort, as well as another member who actually worked at the White House, and that's General Michael Flynn, who has pleaded guilty and is now cooperating with Mr. Mueller's team. So I would let this play out as long as possible to see if any other individuals associated with the Trump inner circle get ensnared in his investigation, and then ask me that question. But so far, I see no reason why I would allow my client, as you put it, President Trump, to sit down with Robert Mueller.
Can he say no? And forgive my ignorance here. Can he plead the fifth, or does that not apply here?
No. Well, there are a few things. Can he say no? Sure, he can say no. But then if he says no, there can be a grand jury subpoena, which would require the president to appear before that federal grand jury, which has been impaneled. Could he take the fifth? Absolutely, he could take the fifth. That's everyone's constitutional right to take the Fifth Amendment, not to incriminate yourself. So both of those things are things the president can do. But one thing lawyers do not like, especially in such a public setting as this, or if you're being asked to testify before a committee in Congress, is to have their client take the Fifth. Why? Although it's a constitutional right, it makes you look guilty of something. And that's something that attorneys don't like to see their clients being made to look in that manner.
Is your sense that this ends with President Trump being interviewed and that's sort of how this investigation wraps up and then we hear findings and conclusions in a little bit after that?
Well, typically, if there is an individual who in this case, as has been confirmed by Fox News, is not a target, but is simply the subject of an investigation. You perhaps want to interview this individual last in your investigation. Get all your facts from other people that you've ensnared, like Mueller, like Paul Manafort, like Rick Gates, like Michael Flynn, and speak to the president last to see if their story matches up with the president's story. So I would imagine, you know, although the president and his team have said, Chris, that they believe that this investigation is winding down, I don't get that sense at all. I think that there's a lot of wishful thinking when they say that. I think we're still a few months away.
Either wishful thinking or just something you tell the president to get him off your back. I mean, we heard it was going to end by Thanksgiving, then the end of the year. I don't know what the president's being told by his legal team now. What happens when this is done? Mueller issues some sort of report, I guess, and then it's up to Congress or the legal system to do what it does?
Well, that's right. So Mr. Mueller is planning a report on the president's conduct, particularly if it relates to actions on his part that could constitute obstruction of justice. If you go down the route of saying what many legal observers have said, and that is that a sitting president can't be indicted, can't be charged with a crime, well, what Mr. Mueller can do is he can present this report to the public, to Congress, and let Congress do its will. If they want to, based upon that report, based upon anything that they find improper on the president's part, bring articles of impeachment against the president, that is within their right to do so. But keep in mind, as it stands right now, Republicans control the House of Representatives, so that appears unlikely. However, if Democrats retake control of the House of Representatives in the midterm elections, things change. And that is a big concern of many Republicans, not only on Capitol Hill, but obviously the president's team here at the White House.
John, thanks for your time.
Thanks a lot, Chris.
Download and make it Hammer Time with Bill Hemmer.
Welcome, Kellyanne Conway.
Carl Rove, welcome.
Ainsley Earhart.
Thank you, Bill.
Duh.
I like the Hemmer Time.
Hemmer Time.
Yeah.
Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcast.com.
It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Harry Kasianis.
What's on your mind?
While the world might be captivated by Russia's rogue actions of late, attacking dissidents on British soil with chemical weapons, backing Syria's Bashar al-Assad, as well as clearly proving its military is back, know this. Russia is condemned to the same fate as the old Soviet Union when it comes to the possibility of a new Cold War. Moscow would lose and be thrown into the scrap heap of history, just like the USSR. But before we declare the state of another dangerous turn in U.S.-Russia relations, it's worth looking at how both sides stack up on paper, according to key measurements, and why President Vladimir Putin is playing a dangerous game, a game that, in fact, he has no way of winning. First is the military balance. While Russia has spent hundreds of billions of dollars on new military equipment, including new atomic weapons, nuclear-powered attack and ballistic missile submarines, cruise missiles, bombers, and some of the world's most advanced tanks, it is still hopelessly outmatched by America both in overall spending and sheer technological prowess. Second, America has a strong bench of allies to call upon if things heat up against Russia. Moscow has very few. Then, there's the economic component of a new Cold War. The Russian economy only produces $1.4 trillion in GDP over a given year. America, on the other hand, is still the world's largest economy, producing roughly $19 trillion in GDP. So knowing America's strengths and Russia's weaknesses, the path forward seems clear for Washington to claim victory if a new Cold War were to start. Washington must call out and push back against any attempt by Moscow to try and create chaos, instability, or harm our allies or partners. In fact, our best playbook might be straight out of the first Cold War, good old-fashioned containment. ramping up slowly, matching Russia action for action. Today, Russia must make a choice. Does Moscow want to end up, as one senior Trump administration official described to me, as the North Korea of Europe, a state diplomatically and economically isolated from its neighbors? Will it someday decide to stop acting like a rogue nation? My hope is for someday a U.S.-Russia relationship that escapes the tensions of the past. But for now, it seems the Cold War is likely back on, and Vladimir Putin should be afraid. I'm Harry Kazianis.
You have been listening to the Fox News Rundown. Stay up to date by subscribing to Fox News Radio's hourly newscast at foxnewspodcasts.com. And for up-to-the-minute news, visit foxnews.com.